John Friend. All right, folks, welcome back to another edition of The Realist Report. This is your host, John Friend. Of course, the website is therealistreport.com, where you can find an extensive archive of these podcasts, as well as other radio broadcasts I have participated in. You can also find other blog posts and articles, a contact page with my personal email address, and my Twitter feed, which is embedded on the right-hand side of the website. I am a regular reporter for American Free Press, America's last real newspaper, and I also contribute to the Barnes Review, the bi-monthly history magazine affiliated with American Free Press. I encourage all listeners to subscribe to both publications. Check out AmericanFreePress.net and BarnesReview.org for more details. All right, with that said, let me introduce my guest this evening, Dr. Kevin McDonald of TheOccidentalObserver.net is joining us once again, and as usual, there is no shortage of topics to analyze and discuss. Dr. McDonald, welcome back to the program, sir. How are you this evening?
Hey, it's great to be here, John. I feel great.
Good.
We just had an attack on Syria. So.
Yes, I was going to say I'm feeling pretty good health wise. I'm in high spirits, but I'm very disappointed and just frankly outraged. I mean, this is just totally ridiculous. And this happened right before we were about to start the show. And I'm sure everybody that's listening at this point is aware that we have launched. I say we. It's not you or I doing this. This is our government.
Definitely not.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much everybody's against this, but. Trump, our president, has ordered our military to attack Syria. We're apparently launching Tomahawk missiles on a Syrian, I think it's an Air Force base, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know exactly all the details. I could probably find them here in just a second.
Yeah, it's an Air Force base.
Yeah, and it's very, very disappointing. I mean, Trump is up here talking about fake news all day long, and here we have a totally fake story. You know, the Assad regime allegedly, you know, gassing his own people, which is ridiculous. You have a good article over at TheOccidentalObserver.net by Colin Liddell that I just read. Why the Syrian gas attack is probably fake, and it most certainly is probably fake. I don't know if we can totally prove that, but it's certainly looking like that. We've seen how they've tried to frame Assad in the past. And, you know, the organized Jewish community is making no secret about the fact that they want us to attack Syria. And they've made this clear years ago when they brought up this fake gassing story again. So, Dr. McDonald, what is your take on all of this?
Well, it's outrageous. There's never been any evidence presented to the public that Assad did this. It's just like, everybody jumps to this conclusion, including I was very surprised that Trump did. And as the article in the Occidental Observer by Colin says, I mean, it didn't benefit. It's crazy. Assad had just gotten an agreement from the Trump administration to make toppling Assad not a priority anymore. Why in the world would he do this 3 days later, knowing full well the kind of response that would come from the West? I mean, it's just crazy. There's no evidence. And, you know, the Russians are denying it. They're saying that there was these gas canisters stored in a warehouse and airstrikes hit it. But it was not a gas attack. And I don't think anybody knew that there were gas stored there. I mean, come on. That's an accident. But I think it's
right.
I think it's a false flag. It's just crazy that Assad would want to do this now, completely counterproductive. It just makes no sense.
It makes absolutely no sense. It's totally against, you know, the national interests of Syria, certainly, of the Assad regime to do something like this, which the West is always harping about, you know, don't you dare use gas and don't you dare use, you know, chemical weapons and all this other nonsense. And of course, that's exactly what they're saying that he's done without any evidence. And what's interesting is you brought this up, how just a couple days ago, the Trump administration was saying that, you know, our priority is not removing Assad anymore. You know, we're willing to, now, I don't know if he said they're necessarily willing to work with them, but they said that they're kind of, you know, turning a new page in this relationship with Syria. And then this happens. And of course, when he made those statements, you know, all the neocons, all the cucks like John McCain and Lindsey Graham were outraged at the Trump administration. And, you know, it's just out. I'm really upset. I really am upset right now. And especially hearing Trump talk about how it's indisputable that Assad gassed his own people. Where's the evidence? I'll tell you where the evidence comes from. I tweeted a couple stories out. One from Haaretz. Here's the headline. Israel 100% certain Assad ordered Syrian chemical attack.
So
it's coming from Israel. All this quote-unquote intelligence is coming from Israel. It's coming from the neocons. It's coming from the Jews, frankly. And this is exactly what they did in the lead-up to the war in Iraq. The exact same thing.
Weapons of mass destruction, right? It's the same story all over again. You have people like Wolfowitz and all these prominent neocons in the Defense Department and so on. And, you know, you're spinning these lies. They're cherry-picking intelligence. And they wanted the war. They got it. It was a disaster. Now they want another one. I mean, we can see the disaster that's unleashed in Iraq. Why can't we see this is going to happen in Syria just as well?
I mean, right. And amazingly, Trump has said this exact same thing that you just said in the past.
Yeah. I mean, it's incredible. And Assad, the fact is, Assad is going to fight to the death. He's not going to make some deal where you give me a few million dollars and I leave. He is part of an ethnic group, the Alawites. If they lose, their whole people get slaughtered, and all the Christians as well. And anybody else who's not, you know, in the ethnic group of the people who eventually win this. You know, that is the reality. They're not going to give up, and they're not going to make a deal. It's crazy. People don't understand the Middle East. The Middle East is tribal. It's ethnic. And it's not going to change. And, you know, we see with that happening in Iraq. You know, toppling Saddam Hussein did not change the basic structure of the society. You still have tribalism. You still have these religious divisions. It's not like it's going to turn into a Western democracy. It's just not. Period.
Right. Well, and Trump has basically said everything you just said in the past when he was running for president, certainly prior to when he was running for president. Yeah. He's been very critical of the war in Iraq and nation building and all these endless wars in the Middle East. And this is a big reason why people supported him. It was a big reason why I supported him. I mean, among other very important things that he was saying, especially as it relates to immigration. But he was talking about an America first foreign policy. We're not going to go get involved in the Middle East. Literally, think about it. We're bombing and killing some of the poorest people on the face of the planet that are thousands of miles away from us, who pose no threat to us in their own countries. They couldn't even barely get over to our countries if it weren't for our technology and our money and these, you know, big non-profit organizations and these refugee resettlement agencies. These people couldn't even get over to our countries. Yeah. Think about how absurd this whole situation is. We're over here bombing and attacking and murdering, frankly, all of these poor people, and then inviting them into our own countries. Because why? Because the Jews said it's a good idea and it's a moral imperative. It is so outrageous. What is going on?
It's a moral imperative. That's the thing it comes down to. And they always pull this on you. Western people, white people, are so susceptible to these moral arguments. Whether it's the Civil War, the First World War, the Second World War, Iraq, you know, we have to do this. There's a moral imperative. We can't let this bad man go. Same with Libya and Muammar Gaddafi. Have things gotten better in Libya? No, it's a disaster. But, you know, they keep pulling this. And I'm shocked that Trump would fall for this. This is just so stupid.
It really is. It's very disappointing. I mean, I don't know how much more I can continue to support this guy after this. This is just this is really crossed the line. Well, and speaking of this idea of the moral imperative and how the Jews have you know, used these arguments to to really exploit us psychologically and emotionally to advance, you know, what they want to do. Look at how they do it. They hold up these photographs of these dead kids, these alleged, you know, gassed victims, which who even knows where these photographs come from. Every time they use this emotional manipulated imagery, whether it's photographs of the dead Turkish kid washed up on the beach. I mean, you name it, every single time, this is how they do it. They have a blueprint for how they do these things.
That's the thing.
And it's many times, I mean, to me, I question the validity of these images. Is this even real? Is this exact? I mean, where did this image come from? Who took it? You know, what's the source of it? Is this a legitimate depiction of reality? You know, I don't think most of it is, but...
There were all these reports that some of the people that were going to help the victims didn't have gloves on, didn't have masks on. Now, if that was really sarin gas, that would kill you.
Right. And, it's like they stage these atrocities and then use the media to present it to the masses as if it were, you know, a real horrific event, when in reality it was nothing of the sort.
And that's the thing. You know, they depend on the fact that so many people will look at an image like that and their entire reaction is emotional. They'll just be empathic. Oh, those poor people. And then they can be manipulated. Oh, it was a sign. You know, they that's the only thing they think about. And the same with the Syrian child that washed up on a beach in Turkey. That's supposed to mean that Europe should have no borders, because you know, this child died trying to get to Europe. People just see that suffering, that iconic photo. They ignore the child lying in the street in Marseille, Cannes down in France, that where like 80 people died in a truck ran over.
Right. All these terrorist attacks in Europe. Not even terrorist attacks, just, you know, white people getting beat up and murdered and raped by non-whites left and right all over the West.
Right.
You know, never mind those people.
Never mind.
Never mind our own people. We don't need to take care of our own people. Yeah, you know, it's true, and it seems to work every time. It's just so outrageous how they do these things. Let me read part of this article. This is from Haaretz. Again, Israel 100% certain Assad ordered Syrian chemical attack, defense minister says. This will be brief. This is very revealing. Always the Jewish press is so revealing. Defense Minister Avigdor Lieberman said on Thursday morning that Syrian President Assad ordered the chemical attack in northwestern Syria, which killed up to 100 people, many of them children, and injured hundreds of others. Lieberman told a newspaper in Israel that Syrian planes carried out the two chemical attacks, which were, quote, directly ordered and planned by Syrian President Bashar Assad. He stressed he was 100% certain. The defense minister said he did not know if Russia was involved in the attack. Lieberman stated that Israel had no reason to get involved in the war. Quote, why do we need to pull the chestnuts out of the fire? This is the international community's responsibility, he said. I am not prepared to be the schmuck that the whole world pisses on. Let the world take responsibility and do something rather than just talk. He added, quote, the international community's response is zilch. It simply doesn't exist. It brings me back to the conclusion that Israel must rely only on itself. Now, God, Dr. McDonald, I'm sorry, but I really just cannot stand these people anymore. Just the nerve that we have to go and fight all these wars for them. And he's just openly saying it. This is what he's saying.
And, you know, this is the same guy, you know, this Avigdor Lieberman, the same guy who's notoriously racist against the Palestinians. If he had his way, there would be a genocide of Palestinians. I mean, he just, you know, no holds barred. Opposed to anything that the Palestinians do. So this guy is no humanitarian.
Right. Oh, of course, no. He's one of the biggest, like, right-wing Zionists over in Israel. He's been involved in the government for years and years and years, and he's basically a psychopath.
He's famously right-wing, and he's about as far as it goes over there, and that's pretty far.
Right. Now, one thing that's interesting is this article, and there's a couple other articles. I have one here from the Times of Israel headline, Israeli intelligence believes Assad behind chemical attack. And it basically goes on to say, again, essentially what this other article in Haaretz was saying, that Israel, you know, their intelligence agencies and their government leaders are 100% certain Assad did this. Yet they provide no evidence, absolutely no evidence. And Trump is out here, you know, parroting these talking points that we know it's an undisputed fact that Assad, you know, did this chemical attack and he's evil and the world can't tolerate this and we got to start bombing all these poor people over there because of this. And yet no one ever provides any evidence.
Yeah, it's insane. I mean, you think about it too, that there have been between 320 and 400,000 people have been killed in the Syrian civil war. And now we're going to, you know, change sides. We're going to completely, I think Rex Tillerson, the Secretary of State, talked about, we have to get rid of Assad. I mean, that's a complete turnaround from like 3 or 4 days ago.
It's a total 100% turnaround, exactly.
We're going to do that because 100 people got killed in this attack, supposedly by Assad, they've given no evidence. This is just outrageous.
It really is. And I mean, I'm actually ready to go make a sign and start protesting in the street right now. It's like 8 o'clock in the evening and I'm really outraged at this. And look at how the left is now attacking Trump. Here's a tweet. I'm reading an article in the Telegraph newspaper. It's a news outlet based in the United Kingdom. Here's Seth Moulton, who I don't know if he's Jewish or not. I wouldn't be surprised if he is, but either way, here's his tweet. This is a typical talking point from the left. So Trump cares enough about the Syrian people to launch 50 Tomahawks, but not enough to let the victims of Assad find refuge and freedom here. So look how they're using this. I mean, it's like either way we lose. Either way, we're going to go to war and bomb and kill all these people, or some of our guys are probably going to die fighting this stupid war. And then, you know, the left is going to attack us for not letting all of them come over here, which we'll probably end up doing anyways.
And they'll become citizens too. That's what they want. I mean, they don't want these camps somewhere, and they don't want to, you know, temporary refugee status. They want citizenship because they want to change the demographics of the country. That's their whole thing.
Absolutely. And they may, again, something that they make no bones about and they openly admit and advocate and organize and fundraise off of. I follow, oh man, I'm sure you're familiar with this organization. It's the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, right? You wrote all about it in Culture Critique. I'm sure you're well aware of this organization. I don't know if you still follow them, but I get email updates from these people. And I mean, every day it's, raise money to help us bring more refugees to the United States. Raise money to help us bring, you know, more illegal aliens from Mexico to get citizenship in the United States. I mean, this is what these people do. They make money off of this.
And they go to Africa and try to recruit refugees there too. They're one of the biggest offenders, but they're definitely quite aware. They're on my radar and I've investigated them a few times. I don't get their emails, maybe.
Right. Well, I mean, it's just one of literally, you know, dozens and maybe even hundreds of Jewish groups, and some of them aren't even Jewish. A lot of them are. I mean, there's a whole industry behind this whole refugee resettlement that literally leeches off the government. The government funds these organizations to the tunes of millions of dollars a year. In many cases, these organizations, these refugee resettlement organizations, they are financially incentivized to bring as many refugees for resettlement into the United States as possible. They get money with each refugee they bring over here. If you're thinking about this from just a purely, you know, public policy perspective, this is just totally counterproductive to our national interests. I mean, you don't even have to be a quote-unquote racist to recognize that.
The entire war on white people is incentivized. I mean, you know, whatever it is. I mean, if you're in a university setting, your job, all the incentives are on being on the side of the left. You don't get any incentives for being on our side. You likely lose your job, lose all, you know, your be ostracized from your family or whatever. So that's the way it's set up, you know, that everything is like that. But yeah, the refugee industry is amazing. And I like to see the salaries of some of these people that run these things. They pretty good money. And you know, but it's just a scandal, but it, you know.
It's a big scam. I mean, it is a scandal, but the whole thing is just one big, it's a racket. That's really probably the best way to characterize it. It's a huge racket.
Yeah. And we expected so much better from Trump. We expected him to stop this shit. And here we go. You know, I don't see that happening. I follow this Ann Corcoran, who runs Refugee Watch on Twitter. And, you know, she did a tweet that the actual numbers of refugees are about the same as during Obama right now. And I just don't see a commitment here. I'm really worried about where Trump is going.
I totally agree with you. And I also follow Ann's blog, Refugee Resettlement Watch. Just type that into Google and it'll come up if you're not familiar with the site. In fact, I think I actually have it linked over on therealistreport.com. In my recommended sites. She does really, really good work and follows this issue very closely. And you're right. I mean, Trump is really not doing anything. I mean, he's basically doing the same thing that all of our other presidents have done. And it's very disappointing. I mean, I totally agree with you. You know, we thought Trump was going to actually follow through on what he was talking about during the campaign. And thus far, he really hasn't. I mean, he's been, you know.
No.
Oh, go ahead.
His executive orders on immigration and refugees were good, but as soon as you do that, then you get the massive attacks from the courts, and so even if he does try to do the right thing, he's going to be stymied. I'm concerned that this whole thing is going to be just a massive paralysis, that the administration is going to be hobbled by these investigations, the surveillance thing, the Trump-Russia collusion thing, that's just endless. I don't see how, even if he wanted to, that he can make much progress right now. That the media and the Democrats and so many Republicans are just dead set against all this stuff. What happened, of course, is you had a hostile takeover of the Republican Party, and this is what happens when somebody takes over who was not one of their guys, not on board. It's like he can't do what he'd want to do, even if he wanted to do it. But now I'm worried he doesn't even want to do it. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one thing's for certain, he's not going to get anywhere if he's caving and agreeing with all this fake news about Syria or about anything else for that matter. And that's what's really so disappointing is, he's calling out the media and he was doing this brilliantly throughout the campaign. And even after he was elected, he was still doing it. And he still does it to a certain extent, especially when it comes to, Russia's quote unquote meddling or influence in the election and helping him get elected. He's calling this out as fake news. He's highlighting how the Obama administration was, illegally surveilling him and whatnot and people close to him. But then he goes right along with this obviously, this obvious fake news story about Assad. I mean, It's very frustrating. It's like opposite of how he normally reacts.
And I'm concerned too that he's going to lose big. I guess it may not matter, but in 2018 and 2020, the Republican Party is going to go down in flames. If he goes back on all his promises, his base is going to desert him. You just can't expect to sell out all these ideas that he had, to give up on immigration, to have a terrible health care bill that doesn't help his white working class base. He can't expect to win. They're going to get killed.
Right. Now, I got, getting back to this situation in Syria, I got another article here from The Allgemeiner, which is, again, another Jewish newspaper. Headline, Major U.S. Jewish Groups Urge International Response to Assad Regime Following Deadly Suspected Chemical Weapons Attack in Syria.
Oh. I'd like to see that.
Imagine my shock when I read this headline. I mean, I remember an article you did back when they were hyping this alleged chemical weapons attack back in, I think, 2013.
That's right.
Wall-to-wall Jewish support for Syrian intervention. I mean, these Jews could not be more clear about what their agenda is. I mean, they just openly admit these things and then call us anti-Semites for pointing it out.
It's really true, and I definitely want to focus on that article. I'm gonna look for it, but that's very typical. And they act as if, well, we're the moral paragons, and we're the moral conscience of humanity. And it's just complete nonsense. I mean, this is an arm of Israeli foreign policy, and anybody who's paying attention knows it.
Yeah, I wanted to get your comments on that as well. I mean, what we're seeing in the Middle East, certainly since 9/11, I mean, everything that the United States is doing in the Middle East, all this intervention, all these wars, they really serve no one's interests but Israel's. And if you study neoconservatism, which I know you have at great length, if you study neoconservatism, if you study sort of the super right-wing, you know, Zionist fanatics over in Israel and some of their publications, what sort of foreign policy they would like to see. I mean, again, they basically openly admit all these things. They openly admit, for example, leading up to 9/11, even before 9/11 happened, we have, public policy papers being written calling for a new Pearl Harbor to kickstart, you know, basically an endless war in the Middle East that would, you know, essentially use the American military, the American military might and also her NATO allies to advance Israel's interests in the region, to topple all of these regimes in the Middle East, and to basically pave the way for Israeli hegemony in the region. Are you familiar with, for example, like the Odid Yanon plan?
Yes.
Which laid this out. And Odid Yanon was like an Israeli military strategist, I think. I mean, he was like part of the Israeli government. And he's writing papers, you know, outlining this agenda, and this is exactly what's happening today.
And in those papers, he talks about the fact that these Arab societies are very, you know, fractionated. They're not one people. They're divided into all these clans and sects. You know, there are probably 13 different ethnic groups in Syria, and they all keep separate from each other. And so it's easy to find people who don't like Assad because, you know, he's a different ethnic group and so on. But that's true of all those Arab societies. They're not stable. And so it's easy to sow dissension. And they get that. So it's been Israeli foreign policy. They've understood this for at least since the 1980s when he started writing those things, I guess. And, we have examples of the think tank. There's a think tank in Israel that combined Israeli strategists with American neocons like Richard Perl, Joseph Wormser, and they openly advocated overthrowing Saddam Hussein. This was in 1998 or something like that, it's obvious what their foreign policy is. They want to weaken all those states. And I heard someone on MSNBC or Fox tonight saying, well, I think we ought to partition. In the end, we'll have to partition Syria. Well, that's exactly what Syria wants. They want a lot of weak little states that can't ever threaten Israel. And
right,
that would serve their interests. And you think about it, who's really won here in terms of the civil war in Syria? Israel's already won. I mean, Syria's just been set back for decades, you know, with all the destruction, the death, the people, you know, leaving the country. It's been a disaster for them. And Israel is just shedding crocodile tears for some victims of a gas attack. Come on. You know?
Yeah, it's so clear what their agenda is and what they want. I mean, again, if you just read their own papers, read their own newspapers, they're not trying to make this a secret or something. I want to talk briefly about how this ties in to the demonization of Russia and this push, again, by the neocons, by the Jews, by the left to demonize Russia, to sort of instigate some sort of conflict between America and Russia. I mean, these people really want us to go to war with Russia. And Putin's response to all this was interesting. I have another article here in Haaretz again. Putin to Netanyahu, your, quote, groundless accusations on Syria chemical attack are unacceptable. So Putin seems to be actually standing up to these people, unlike Trump.
Right. Exactly. And I've noticed that with these neocons, as soon as they condemn Assad, they talk about Russia. What they really want to do is go after Russia, or at least go after both probably, but that they don't want to let Russia off the hook. In fact, in the article in the Actual Observer, we did talk about that we had Jonathan Tobin, who writes for Commentary and National Review, and his whole thing was we got to stand up to Putin and Russia, and that's been a big theme. And as we all know, the hostility towards Russia is a long time. They've hated Russia for all kinds of reasons. Russia is a nationalist state. They don't like that. They want Europe to be a melting pot of or a multicultural mishmash. I think there's a lot of Jewish resentment, and especially among the neocons, about what happened to the oligarchs. They've never forgiven Putin for deposing these Jewish oligarchs and getting them, making them, either get out of the country, taking them away, putting them in prison, like Michael Kordakovsky, just making them not be involved in politics. I mean, there was a time in Russia when these oligarchs just absolutely controlled everything, the media, and therefore the political, they had huge political influence. And I think that really influenced Putin. And but that means that these people have a huge hatred towards Putin.
Right. And see, from what I understand, and I'm certainly no expert when it comes to Russia, when the Soviet Union collapsed and there was the big, privatization scheme, all of these big former state-run companies and monopolies, essentially, were privatized, and a gang of Jewish criminals basically came in and took them over and bought them out and made, huge amounts of money and basically ran the country. And Putin, sort of was against this and has been trying to make moves to get the country back on the right track and to put these people in check. Some people argue that, he's, involved with these people. I doubt that. I don't, again, I don't know all the details. I'm not that well read on this topic, but that's basically my understanding of the situation. And it seems to me that Putin does actually want to put his country first. And see, that's the thing. They were calling Putin Hitler back before Trump was involved in politics. They've been calling Trump the new Hitler, and they were calling Putin the new Hitler back, going back 2-3 years ago. So it's like they see Putin and Trump as these potentially nationalistic leaders that want to put their own country's interests first rather than the globalists, rather than the Jews. And they see them as threats.
And, there's a big involvement of a Harvard University with these Jewish economists, including Larry Summers, who were, sort of orchestrating this and being the experts on how to turn.
Right. They were the advisors that, advocated all these things. Oh, hey, yeah, you got to privatize this. You got to privatize that. Here, why don't you just give it to my Jewish buddy over in Russia? That's basically what they did.
The scheme was that all Russians had a certain amount of shares in the public companies. But then these Jews went in and with huge amounts of money and capital, and they paid these people a certain amount of money for their shares. And then they owned the steel, they owned the oil, they owned everything. And that was how it was done. But that was all done under the auspices and the encouragement of Harvard faculty. Harvard University, Harvard actually ended up paying a huge amount of money because of assuming some liability in the whole thing. But because some of these professors made huge amounts of money. It was absolutely scandalous. But again, it's one of the things that just you don't even see talked about.
Right. Well, I agree with you. And it's interesting how, again, Putin, at least from what I can tell so far, he does appear to be, saying, hey, look, how do we know this, you know, Assad did this? There's no evidence. This is a groundless accusation. Again, a quote from the article. Yeah. So I'm encouraged by that, but the whole thing with Trump is just really, really disappointing. And one thing I was reading, apparently, I mean, Russia does have I don't know if they're bases, but they do have military personnel in Syria. And apparently this Air Force base that we were bombing, that there was Russians there. I mean, what are we trying to do here? Get involved with a war? And that's what they want. They do want us to get involved with the war in Russia based on, you know, their hysterical allegations and all the statements they've been making about Russia and how they've been trying to demonize them. So this is very, very, you know, shaky territory we're in here. I mean, it would just be such a tragedy if we ended up getting in a war with Russia.
Absolute tragedy.
Well, and what's weird is Tillerson seemed to be really close to Russia and have all these Russian connections. That was, you know, a big reason why everyone was criticizing him when Trump nominated him. And yet, you know, he's basically thrown them under the bus at this point, saying that Russia is not living up to their obligations to prevent Syria from, you know, using quote-unquote chemical weapons and all this other nonsense. So, I don't know. I'm really disappointed in Tillerson, too. I thought he was kind of like a Trump guy, but apparently not.
And, you know, you'd expect that Trump would at least say something like, well, all of our intelligence agencies have confirmed this. He didn't even say that. I don't know where his idea comes from here. Where's he getting this? He doesn't even say. He just says it is. I mean, we're supposed to just accept that?
Right. Well, I would be willing to bet that their intelligence comes directly from the Israelis.
Yeah, to the extent it exists at all. But yeah, but you'd think that he would, you know, try to get the CIA, you know, their opinion and so on about what happened, without, independent of the Israelis. But they don't even seem to do that.
Yeah, it's, trust me, I feel your frustration. It's very demoralizing. I mean, I feel demoralized right now. I mean, it's just so outrageous that especially Trump. I mean, we had all these high hopes, and I guess, you know, I shouldn't have been. I don't know. It just, Trump seems so different. He seemed like such a renegade. Like, he, you know, he really meant what he said and really was going to try to follow through on all these things. And who knows, maybe he will to a certain extent. But this is almost unforgivable to me.
Yeah. And that as you say, I mean, whenever I've seen him, I saw him in person one time. And he seemed so sincere. You know, he really did talk about America first. And you know, he's got this long history of opposing intervention in other countries, and opposing the Iraq war and so on. Well, what's he going to do? Create another Iraq and Syria? Gosh.
I mean, that's exactly what's going to happen. And by the way, this is what I was reading about Tillerson. Tillerson's over here arguing that Moscow was either complicit or incompetent in its ability to carry out the agreement limiting Syria's chemical weapons. So it's almost as if he's arguing that Russia either let them do this or was actively involved in Assad, you know, doing this. This is very, very reckless rhetoric coming from Tillerson of all people. I mean, this is not good at all.
Not good at all. And you know, Tillerson is going to Moscow next week. I can hardly believe that this is happening. It's just mind-boggling.
What do you think? What do you think the response of, you know, Trump supporters is going to be? I think a lot of people are going to be very, very upset with this.
Well, I'm on Twitter, the people I know and the all right are just furious. Everybody I've talked to and seen on Twitter and so on, I mean, they're just giving up. I mean, a lot of them are just bailing on Trump. I don't want to do that. I think that's a little premature. But, you know, this is not a good sign. And I'm worried, for example, with respect to Russia, that all this pressure that Trump has been under with the Trump Russia collusion, that he feels he needs to do something opposed to Russia, to show his bona fides, that he's not really a Russian puppet or something. Maybe that's another explanation for what's going on here. I just don't see. It doesn't make any sense what he's doing, but you know, it's really, he's been attacked so many times for that. You know, he's got to show his stripes. I'm not Putin's boy.
Right. Yeah. No. I hear you. That's an interesting idea. And you know, again, it's just disappointing. I mean, I thought Trump was different out of anybody, that he wouldn't be bullied or intimidated by that nonsense.
And you know, I just saw, you know, but the fact is, we're better off at him than Clinton, Hillary Clinton, because she just tweeted that we should actually bomb all the air bases in Syria. And she's even more bellicose, even more anti-Russian than Trump could ever be. So this is an absolute establishment idea. This is ensconced in both parties, really. And as you say, I thought Trump was different. And that's what he said he was. He said he was different.
He said he was different. He acted like he was different. I mean, that was the thing about Trump is, I mean, he would say all these great things and then actually, like, you know, in the real world, like, act differently than all these other people. He did not seem like a sellout at all. And, I mean, he was taking steps to follow through on all of his promises and all the things that he talked about and continues to talk about to a certain extent. But, yeah.
This guy, you know, that went to South Carolina during the Republican debates. This is a big military state and all that. And he talked about, he condemned the war in Iraq, condemned the George Bush administration, said they lied to the American people. And here we go. You know, I mean, here he's not lying, perhaps, but he's acting on the basis without any evidence. It's just about as bad.
Right. You know, another thing I should probably bring up is I'm baffled why Trump would appoint Nikki Haley to be the UN ambassador. And she was out there just the other day saying, oh, you know, we may have to take action against Russia and against Syria, et cetera. And, I mean, she's very, again, she seems like the opposite of Trump. Like, why would he appoint her to the UN? I don't understand that. Was this more of like a political thing he did, do you think?
Yeah, it must have been, because she opposed him during the primaries, at least. And there she's at the UN holding up pictures of these victims.
Well, right, yeah, she's at the UN. How many more children have to die before Russia cares? If Russia has the influence in Syria that it claims to have, we need to see them use it. We need to see them put an end to these horrific acts. I mean, again, this whole thing with Syria just totally ties into the anti-Russia demonization campaign as well. They're very closely linked. And by the way, it looks like some of the sources for this alleged sarin gas attack, I don't know if it's necessarily sarin, but this gas attack, come from a very suspicious organization, a very globalist organization, Doctors Without Borders. Imagine my shock.
Yeah, they're extremely left.
The very objective organization there. Yeah, so, I mean, it's, this whole thing is so phony, so fishy, it's, I think everybody's just a little bit emotional and pissed off right now, as we probably rightly, you know, deserve to be.
We've been taken for, we feel betrayed, you know, and taken advantage of. Because we, you know, we supported him. We were the only group that really supported Trump. The only intellectually identifiable, you know, perspective that was supporting Trump. And here we are, and 3 months into it, he completely throws away all the things he said. I mean,
right, yeah. This is a very big deal, a very, very tragic and fatal mistake that I think he's making. And again, what's so amazing is he was saying on Twitter and saying publicly, you know, before he even got involved in politics, how disastrous our foreign policy's been, how these wars are so counterproductive, how we should not be in Iraq, we should not be in Syria, we should not be really anywhere in the Middle East. And yet, you know, here he is, you know, invading another country. It's really shameful, like the whole situation. Like I, and with Trump, I was proud to be an American once again. Like I was ashamed to be an American under any other president since I've been alive. And yeah. Here's Trump, and I'm proud. I want to wear my Trump shirt. You know, I want to be pro, you know, pro America and all that. And I guess it's kind of a superficial thing, but I mean, I think it's very important for people to proudly identify with their country. And I certainly do with Trump. And now I'm just like, this is just like Bush. We're just out here invading and bombing all these poor brown people for no reason because the Jews, you know, made up some atrocity story and we just blindly accept it without even checking it.
After he won the election was that he kept the neocons out of his administration. I mean, none of them got in. You know, whether it was Elliot Abrams or even John Bolton, any of those guys. And now his foreign policy looks like something right out of the neocon playbook.
Right. Now, what do you think? I'd like to get your take with Jared Kushner, who of course is Jewish. Now, Trump does have a lot of Jews close to him. I don't know if you could necessarily say that they're neocons. I don't think many of them are. And in fact, I've read countless articles from the Jewish press saying how the neocons are basically shut out and you know, excluded from the Trump administration, much to their chagrin. So, I mean, what role is Jared Kushner having in all this? He seems to be a pretty, frankly, subversive character involved in the Trump administration.
Yeah, I think it's very unclear. I mean, I've read a few articles. It's very complex. They talk about a lot of infighting, palace intrigue, and so on, that Kushner is opposing Steve Bannon and may now have Trump's ear more than Bannon. They had a photo of this dinner at Mar-a-Lago, I think just now, I think it was. And Steve Bannon was on one end of the table, and Kushner was sitting right next to Donald Trump. And you know, there's a sort of suggestion that he's, you know, more influential and that Bannon has lost face. I think that Bannon lost face partly, I don't know the whole story, obviously, and there's extreme, you know, intrigue going on here. But part of it was the health care thing, where there was a fiasco there. The first rollout of that immigration plan didn't work. But the health care thing, you know, Bannon was going to Congress to say, you've got to do this and all that, and it just didn't work. And so I think that Trump may have lost some confidence in Bannon. But to bring in Kushner, you know, Kushner's not considered a neocon, but he is a gung-ho, pro-Israeli, pro-settlement kind of guy. He might as well be a neocon. I'm sure that he's got the same worldview that neocons have, you know, when it comes to anything related to Israel. So I am concerned about that, yeah.
Right, yeah. It's just kind of weird to me, like, how Kushner is so close to Trump and seems to be influencing him. I mean, where'd this guy, who is this guy? Like, what are his credentials? Why is he, like, advising our president and telling him what to do and whatnot? I mean, it's just, it's really bizarre. I don't know a whole lot about Kushner, to be honest, but I just find it very suspicious. And you know me, it's always a Jew. It's always a Jew there doing all these things and advocating all these destructive policies. And in this case, it certainly seems to be him.
This guy has no experience in politics or foreign policy or anything.
That's all what I mean. I mean, where's he come from?
All of a sudden, he's put in charge of dealing with the Middle East. And, you know, it's a very complicated thing. You know, he travels to Iraq and all this stuff. As if, you know, he's some kind of expert. He's not. But he's just a businessman. You know, he's a real estate mogul. That's all he is. He's definitely got the confidence of Donald Trump. I worry because I don't think he's going to be hardcore on immigration like Steve Bannon was. And, you know, if you really demote Steve Bannon, and sooner or later it'll be really obvious whether he is demoted, you're going to lose the base. You can't avoid that. I mean, Bannon was really a guy that I think everybody on our side really was happy to see there. You know, probably the best possible thing we could get into the White House at this stage. But to think that now he's being sort of pushed aside, you know, is just not good news. And, you know, I don't trust Kushner at all.
Yeah, I agree with you. Well, I don't know if there's much more we can say about the Syrian situation. It's very, very tragic and unfortunate and very disappointing. Demoralizing, really, is probably a better word. It's just a travesty. One other topic I wanted to bring up before we wrap up is something that's been in the news. It probably dominated the headlines prior to this whole situation. And that is all of these alleged anti-Semitic bomb threats at all of these, you know, Jewish community centers all over the country, and other, you know, Jewish organizations and whatnot. And it turns out, of course, I mean, surprise, surprise, they were all done by a young dual citizen, an Israeli-American young Jewish man who lives over in Israel with his parents, and his dad was tied into the high-tech industry and may have been involved in it. It's still kind of murky, the details. But he has been discovered. He has been caught. The FBI was involved with the Israeli police and, you know, finding this guy and arresting him. And from what I understand, you know, the Israeli intelligence, Israeli law enforcement sort of knew, you know, they had a hunch as to who was behind this. It may have been somebody from Israel. But once the FBI got involved, they really, you know, actually took action to arrest this guy, to arrest this young man. So this whole thing, and it was weird because the way the Jew, not weird, but it, of course unsurprising with the way the Jews operate, the Jews were using this, all these threats, to harp on Trump, to, you know, demand, literally demand, that his administration take action against anti-Semitism and hate, and, you know, denounce anti-Semitism and make a speech about it and enact laws and give the Jews and all these Jewish organizations even more money. Right. For security and all this other nonsense. And, of course, it turns out to be an Israeli Jewish man who is behind us all. Have you followed this situation? I'm sure you have.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, exactly what you say. And I think that it's just another one of these hoaxes. I'm still on the faculty email list at the California State University of Long Beach, and the Jewish faculty were agonizing about all these threats to Jews, and like they were under personal attack. And as you say, I mean, one of the big themes was always linking it to Trump. You know, they wouldn't do that in the past. I mean, there have been these kinds of things over the years, and they never have done this. But now this is a sign of incipient fascism, that Hitler had come and it's inciting all these people to do horrible things. That was the message. And, you know, in the wake of this, though, I think a lot of Jews are really upset because, you know, people are not going to believe it anymore. They made such a big stink out of this that the next time you have threats against a Jewish center or knocked over gravestones or something like that, people are going to say, well, who did this? Was this a Jewish guy? We don't know. Nobody knows who did it. You know, so.
Well, and the thing is, I mean, literally, it's almost like 9 times out of 10, there's a quote-unquote anti-Semitic vandalism or anti-Semitic attack, or someone sprays a swastika somewhere. I mean, literally, it's like every time it's a Jew doing it.
Yeah.
It's really, like, incredible. And again, you can find this out by reading the Jewish press. I mean, there's so many examples. There's another example of a guy in New York, a Jewish guy in New York, and it wasn't in New York City. It was somewhere in the state of New York anyways. He painted a swastika on his house, yeah. called the cops. The cops investigated it and found out that he actually is the one who did it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, these people are so outrageous, so ridiculous.
The same thing happens with blacks and Muslims. There are a lot of examples of that.
Right, or gay people. Gay people do these sort of like false flag type attacks, I guess you could say. It's incredible. And then it's discovered that it's a hoax, and yet the narrative is still there. There's still that, oh, there's this rising tide of hate and anti-Semitism and bigotry and all this other nonsense. So, I mean, it's just used to advance their agenda.
It's like what the Southern Poverty Law Center does, right? There's all this hate crimes, and the Ku Klux Klan is about to take over America, so give us more money. You know?
Right, right, exactly. Well, and see, that's really the big story with Trump, at least from the Jews' perspective. I mean, you know, he was out there saying he loves Israel, he's going to be the best president for Israel, and, you know, he has all these Jewish connections. His family is married to Jews, at least some of his children. And so they couldn't really say that he was an anti-Semite, although they tried to do that, but it's just ridiculous when you think about it or when you objectively analyze the situation. But what they were mostly concerned about was the fact that Trump was allowing all of these politically incorrect ideas to enter mainstream political discourse. And I mean, from the very beginning, I mean, that's what really sparked my interest in Trump is during that debate when he just said, I don't have time for political correctness. And he said that in front of a national audience. I mean, primetime television. And so really that's the big story with Trump is he's allowing our ideas to flourish and gain more traction, to gain more legitimacy. And that's what they fear the most because they've basically, you know, their whole agenda is suppressing our ideas and not letting anybody entertain our ideas and demonizing our ideas.
And during the campaign, I think the whole idea was to use the alt-right as a whipping boy and connect them to Trump in the hopes that the public would therefore reject Trump. And, you know, so we got a lot of attention, a lot of interviews and articles and everything. But it didn't work. And, you know, it's helped us. It's put us on the map. But I think that the publicity has gone down since the election. But, you know, I think in a way they shot themselves in the foot by doing that. I mean, they didn't have to talk about us, but they wanted to link Steve Bannon to the alt-right and he's a fascist and all that stuff. And
it's so laughable. I mean, that whole situation was so laughable, whether it was Bannon or saying Trump was an anti-Semite. I mean, clearly these guys are not at all. They're not racist. They're not anti-Semitic at all. They're you know, civic nationalists at best. They're pro-America. And they're just, I mean, basic law and order, common sense type guys. And yet, even that is still too radical to the, you know, for the leftists and for, you know, for the Jews.
Yeah. Absolutely true. I don't think Steve Bannon, I've never really seen anything that really approaches what I think of as the alt-right. But they use that as a, I think he mentioned one time something about the alt-right. And so that was, you know, that set them off. And then they started making all these links. But what did he were? I mean, that would have been... Yeah, I think he may. You know, I do think that some of the things he said were really radical. And, you know, he really seemed to have Trump's ear. But now I'm very worried that his influence is on the wane. And I just know as Richard Spencer did a tweet that Steve Bannon ought to resign or I'll lose all respect for him. I don't know that that's a great idea because I think that, you know, if he stays in, if he hangs in there, maybe he can do some good. But, you know, that there is a disenchantment with Steve Bannon and a concern because he's been demoted and all that.
Right. What I'm curious about is what is going to happen with the whole immigration situation. You know, you had mentioned earlier how all the courts are basically throwing a major wrench. Yeah. And again, very common sense, you know, proposals put forth by Trump, very common sense executive orders that are entirely lawful and entirely constitutional. And that seems to be kind of taking a back burner at the moment, but... This is probably the most important issue facing our certainly our country, most certainly our race. I mean, we have got to put we got to shut down immigration, definitely illegal immigration. And, you know, I haven't really heard much about that in, you know, certainly the past few days. I mean, this whole Syria situation's kind of stolen the headlines. But I mean, if Trump can at least, you know, make some progress on that front, you know, that'll be good. But I don't even know if he's going to be able to do anything with immigration. I mean, the way he's being stymied and you know, hindered by the courts and whatnot.
Some of the things that Bannon said, you know, about immigration were very encouraging. He did seem to have the idea was not just about illegal immigration; it was about legal immigration. And so I think that is there, but, you know, I think it's a long, long ways. And, you know, with what's happened to the executive orders, we got some judge in Hawaii and a couple other judges, you know, blocking this order. And basically, what they're arguing here is that people in Syria or wherever have constitutional rights in America. Come on, where do you get that idea? You know, this is this new legal doctrine that everyone has a right to immigrate here. And they have a right to, they have standing to sue. And if their interests are blocked, you got to at least hear them in court or something, you know. It's just nuts. But that's the sad thing, that the left has been so powerful and has taken over so many positions as judges. That's why Gorsuch is very important. I believe that he will be quite conservative and would not uphold that kind of ridiculous legal theory, but we'll see.
Right. Yeah, okay. Well, Dr. McDonald, I said I'd keep to about an hour, and we are right at the hour mark. I don't know if you have any other concluding remarks to make about this whole situation. I think I've pretty much said what I need to say. I'm a little bit... maybe not as well organized in my head right now because I'm just really outraged at this whole situation. But do you have anything else you want to add to this, or any, you know, concluding remarks?
Well, I just wanted to, you know, say I enjoyed being on the show again and we can do it again. But also, you know, it's like one thing after another that we've had, and we've had these surveillance things, and until this Syria attack came along, it was all about, you know, the Trump-Russia collusion. And then the alternative theory was the whole thing about Susan from the Obama administration.
Susan Rice.
Susan Rice, yeah.
Right.
And it's been one thing after another. I think that has contributed to the paralysis here. That, and this is definitely part of what the Democrats want, what the media wants, what a certain number of Republicans want. They want to paralyze this administration. They've been quite successful. And I think Trump is reacting defensively now. And again, that may be why, you know, he softened some of his stances. I don't think he's going to follow through on immigration anytime soon. And I do think that maybe he's trying to get the idea that he's not Putin's boy and all that kind of thing. And so that's a reaction to all this pressure, this daily constant barrage that they have been under ever since he was elected. So it's difficult, and I sympathize with Trump in a way. Maybe he's trying to do the best that he can under the circumstances. I don't know. I still want to give him the benefit of the doubt. I feel very betrayed and unhappy right now, but at the same time, you know, he may sort of see. I mean, you see all of a sudden there's some more positive reports. Even the New York Times says something positive. That contrasting with Obama, that Trump was much more decisive about responding and all that. Well, maybe he sees this as a way out of the paralysis. I don't know, but it's very disheartening, and it's hard to know where this is all going right now.
Right. Well, one thing I do know is caving or giving in to any of this pressure is not going to benefit Trump at all. He's got to stand up and be the decisive leader that we want him to be. He's the one in charge. He needs to recognize that and remember that. That's the way he's always operated. That's why, you know, people love him and supported him, is because he's the one in charge. His ideas and his agenda is gonna prevail, and he can't cave. And when he does cave, these people, they smell blood in the water and they attack. They're gonna attack anyways. But when he shows any sort of weakness, you know, they're really gonna go after him. And I sense some weakness coming from Trump right now, and that's not good.
You know, it's the mind of the New York Times about immigration and refugees, believe me.
Right, right. Well, okay, yeah, we'll definitely have to do this again and see, you know, what's going to happen. Of course, your website is theoccidentalobserver.net, and then also you have the excellent publication, The Occidental Quarterly. Right. Can you give out the website real quick so people can subscribe to that as well?
Yeah, The Occidental Quarterly is a quarterly sort of academic journal, longer articles, footnoted, and so on. The website is www.toqonline.com. So toqonline.com.
And we really appreciate subscriptions because we're trying to be self-sufficient. We're subsidized right now by the Charles Martel Society, and we're trying to do our best to become self-sufficient. It's really high-quality stuff. I think everybody would enjoy reading those kind of articles.
Absolutely. I totally agree. I was a subscriber. I'm literally going to go subscribe right now once we hang up, because I it is great work, and we need to start supporting each other and supporting publications like this. And, you know, this is one easy way to do it. Go pay for a subscription, get the magazine, get the – this is more like a journal. It's really, really high-quality stuff. So, guys, check it out. I'll have a link to it when I post this program so other people can do the same thing. Dr. McDonald, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. It's always a pleasure and really an honor to speak with you. So, yeah, we'll have to do it again.
We'll do it again.
Okay. Thank you, sir. You have a good night, and we will talk to everybody real soon.
You too. Bye-bye.